Hey there, and welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're diving into Eric Olin-Wright's How to Be an Anti-Capitalist in the 21st Century. Sophie, I have to ask, when you hear the word anti-capitalist, what comes to mind?
Honestly, Sam, I used to think of protesters with signs and maybe a bit of doom and gloom. But this book completely changed my perspective. It's not about smashing everything down. It's about building something new right alongside the old.
Yeah, and that's what grabbed me. Wright says the old models of revolution just don't work. You know, the idea of a vanguard party seizing the state and abolishing private property overnight has been a disaster whenever it's been tried.
Right. And he's equally critical of just trying to make capitalism more humane from within, because the system's drive for profit will always undermine those reforms. So he proposes a third path, eroding capitalism.
Eroding capitalism. I love that phrase. It's not about waiting for the big collapse. It's about using the spaces we have now to build the institutions of a post-capitalist future, and then gradually expanding them until they become a real alternative.
Exactly. And before we get into the how, let's talk about the why. Wright identifies three main harms of capitalism. The first is inequality, which is not a bug but a feature. The ownership of capital gives some people immense advantages over those who have to sell their labor.
And it's not just about a smaller slice of the pie. It corrupts democracy and distorts opportunity. Your life chances are largely determined by the lottery of birth.
Then there's what he calls the tyranny of the bottom line. Decisions that affect millions of lives, like where to invest and what to produce, are made on a single criterion, profitability.
That explains why we have an abundance of luxury goods, but a shortage of affordable housing. And it's the engine of the climate crisis, because endless growth collides with the planet's limits.
And the third harm is the commodification of everything. Capitalism turns every aspect of life into a commodity, including things we use to hold sacred, like care for the elderly or even political influence.
So capitalism is pretty damaging. But what's the alternative? Wright doesn't give us a single blueprint. He's a socialist, but his socialism is pluralistic and democratic.
He builds it on three core values: equality, democracy, and solidarity. And these aren't just abstract ideals. They're the criteria for judging our institutions and designing new ones.
So how do we actually erode capitalism? Wright says there are three key arenas of struggle: the state, the economy, and civil society.
Let's start with the state. The goal isn't to seize it in one blow, but to use democratic power to create non-capitalist spaces. Things like universal health care and free public education, which decommodify basic necessities.
And we can also use the state to create new forms of property, like public banks that invest in socially useful projects, or publicly owned utilities that prioritize service over profit.
Right.
It's about expanding democratic decision-making and shrinking the realm of private profit.
Then there's the economy itself. And this is where Wright puts a lot of emphasis on the workplace. He's a big fan of worker-owned cooperatives.
And these aren't just utopian fantasies. I mean, there's the Mondragon Corporation in Spain, which is massive. And there are countless smaller co-ops in the US and Europe.
In a cooperative, the workers own and control the enterprise, elect management, and share in the profits. They're more democratic, more resilient, and often more productive.
They also counter the tyranny of the bottom line, because decisions can be made based on the well-being of workers and the community, not just profit.
And then there's civil society. That's where the seeds of a new society are often planted.
Wright highlights what he calls the social economy, which includes community land trusts, credit unions, and mutual aid networks. These are driven by a mission of meeting human needs, not making a profit.
A community land trust takes land out of the speculative market, making it permanently affordable for housing. And a credit union, owned by its members, can provide fair loans to people that a bank would ignore.
These institutions are small, but they're powerful because they show that another way of organizing our lives is possible. They create a tangible experience of cooperation rather than competition.
And here's the kicker. These three arenas aren't separate silos. They're deeply interconnected. A strong cooperative movement needs a supportive state with legal frameworks and access to capital.
And a strong public sector needs a vibrant civil society to hold it accountable and keep it from becoming bureaucratic. So it's a multi-front war, where progress in one area creates conditions for progress in another.
It's the opposite of a single, decisive event. It's a long, patient, creative process.
But Wright is also honest about the challenges. Capitalists won't just surrender their power. They'll use their wealth to fight back through lobbying, media control, and the threat of capital flight.
And there's the risk of co-optation. A public healthcare system can be starved of funds and turned into a second-class service. A cooperative can be pressured to behave like a capitalist firm.
So it's not a smooth, linear progression. It's a constant struggle to defend and expand the gains that have been made.
And Wright is critical of a certain kind of anti-capitalist purism that rejects any engagement with the existing system. Some people say we should wait for the total collapse of capitalism.
But he sees that as dangerous and self-defeating. It leaves people with no hope in the present and no strategy for the future.
So the task is to live as if the revolution has already begun by building the institutions of a new world here and now. He calls this realistic utopianism.
It means getting our hands dirty, making compromises, and accepting partial victories. It's a politics of building, not just raging.
I think the part that got me was his image of the gardener. Instead of waiting for the storm, we're architects and builders, patiently cultivating the seeds of a new world in the soil of the old.
And that's the essence of being an anti-capitalist in the 21st century. It's not about a single leader or party. It's about all of us, working together to create a society based on equality, democracy, and solidarity.
What I'm taking away is that the most radical thing we can do is not to wait for the big collapse, but to start building the alternative right now, brick by brick, cooperative by cooperative, and policy by policy.
And if you want to explore more of these ideas, the whole library is on 7minutebooks.com/app. There are over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. And it's just $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access. So, in the end, this book isn't a blueprint for a perfect future. It's a compass, pointing us toward a better world and reminding us that the work starts now, with each of us, in our own communities. We'll see you in the next one.